thing. Steam curled from his skin when I touched his forehead, so I decided I'd best leave him for the moment. Zia was another story. Her face was deathly pale, and she was bleeding from several nasty cuts on her leg. One of her arms was twisted at a bad angle. Her breath rattled with a sound like wet sand. "Hold still." I ripped some cloth from the hem of my pants and tried to bind her leg. "Maybe there's some healing magic or..." "Sadie." She gripped my wrist feebly. "No time. Listen. If we can stop the bleeding, his name. You need his name." "But you're not Nephthys. Set said so." She shook her head. "A message. I speak with her voice. The name. Evil Day. Set was born, and it was an evil day." True enough, I thought. But could that really be Set's secret name? What Zia was talking about, not being Nephthys but speaking with her voice, it made no sense. Then I remembered the voice at the river. Nephthys had said she would send a message, and Anubis had made me promise I would listen to Nephthys. I shifted uncomfortably. "Look, Zia." Then the truth hit me in the face. Some things Iskandar had said, some things Toth had said, they all clicked together. Iskandar had wanted to protect Zia. He'd told me if he'd realized Carter and I were godlings sooner, he could have protected us as well as... someone. As well as Zia. Now I understood how he'd tried to protect her. "Oh, God!" I stared at her. "That's it, isn't it?" She seemed to understand, and she nodded. Her face contorted with pain, but her eyes remained as fierce and insistent as ever. "Use the name. Bend Set to your will. Make him help."
"Help? He just tried to kill you, Zia. He's not the helping type."
"Go!" She tried to push me away. Flames sputtered weakly from her fingers. "Carter needs you." That was the one thing she might have said to spur me on. Carter was in trouble. "I'll be back then," I promised. "Don't, go anywhere." I stood and stared at the hole in the ceiling, dreading the idea of turning into a kite again. Then my eyes fixed on Dad's coffin, buried in the red throne. The sarcophagus was glowing like something radioactive, heading for meltdown. If I could only break the throne...
"Set must be dealt with first," Isis warned.
"But if I can free Dad..." I stepped towards the throne.
"No," Isis warned. "What you might see is too dangerous."
"What are you talking about?" I thought irritably. I put my hand on the golden coffin. Instantly I was ripped from the throne room and into a vision. I was back in the land of the dead, in the Hall of Judgment. The crumbling monuments of a New Orleans graveyard shimmered around me. Spirits of the dead stirred restlessly in the mist. At the base of the broken scales, a tiny monster slept, Amit the Devourer. He opened one glowing yellow eye to study me, then went back to sleep. Anubis stepped out of the shadows. He was dressed in a black silk suit, with his tie unknotted like he'd just come back from a funeral, or possibly a convention for really gorgeous undertakers.
"Sadie, you shouldn't be here."
"Tell me about it," I said, but I was so glad to see him I wanted to sob with relief. He took my hand and led me towards the empty black throne.
"We have lost all balance. The throne cannot be empty. The restoration of Maat must begin here, in this hall."
He sounded sad, as if he were asking me to accept something terrible. I didn't understand, but a profound sense of loss crept over me. "It's not fair," I said.
"No, it's not."
He squeezed my hand.
"I'll be here, waiting." "I'm sorry, Sadie. I truly am."
He started to fade. "Wait!" I tried to hold on to his hand, but he melted into mist along with the graveyard. I found myself back in the throne room of the gods, except it looked like it had been abandoned for centuries. The roof had fallen in, along with half of the columns. The braziers were cold and rusty. The beautiful marble floor was as cracked as a dry lake bed. Bast stood alone next to the empty throne of Osiris. She gave me a mischievous smile, but seeing her again was almost too painful to bear.
"Oh, don't be sad," she chided. "Cats don't do regret."
"But aren't you dead?"
"That all depends." She gestured around her. "The Duat is in turmoil. The gods have gone too long without a king. If Set doesn't take over, someone else must. The enemy is coming. Don't let me die in vain."
"But will you come back?" I asked, my voice breaking. "Please, I never even got to say goodbye to you. I can't—"
"Good luck, Sadie. Keep your claws sharp."
Bast vanished, and the scenery changed again. I stood in the Hall of Ages in the first gnome, another empty throne, and Iskandar sat at its feet, waiting for a pharaoh who hadn't existed for 2,000 years.
"A leader, my dear," he said. "Mut demands a leader."
"It's too much," I said. "Too many thrones. You can't expect Carter—"
"Not alone," Iskandar agreed. "But this is your family's burden. You started the process. The Canes alone will heal us or destroy us."
"I don't know what you mean." Iskandar opened his hand, and in a flash of light, the scene changed one more time. I was back at the Thames. It must have been the dead of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, because the embankment was empty. Mist obscured the lights of the city, and the air was wintry. 2 people, a man and a woman, stood bundled against the cold, holding hands in front of Cleopatra's Needle. At first, I thought they were a random couple on a date. Then, with a shock, I realized I was looking at my parents. My dad lifted his face and scowled at the obelisk. In the dim glow of the street lamps, his features looked like chiseled marble, like the pharaoh statues he loved to study. He did have the face of a king, I thought, proud and handsome.
"You're sure?"
he asked my mother.
"Absolutely sure?"
Mum brushed her blonde hair out of her face. She was even more beautiful than her pictures, but she looked worried, eyebrows furrowed, lips pressed together. Like me when I was upset, when I looked in the mirror and tried to convince myself things weren't so bad. I wanted to call to her, to let her know I was there, but my voice wouldn't work.
"She told me this is where it begins," my mother said.
She pulled her black coat around her, and I caught a glimpse of her necklace, the amulet of Isis, my amulet. I stared at it, stunned, but then she pulled her collar closed and the amulet disappeared.
"If we want to defeat the enemy, we must start with the obelisk. We must find out the truth."
My father frowned uneasily. He'd drawn a protective circle around them, blue chalk lines on the pavement. When he touched the base of the obelisk, the circle began to glow.
"I don't like it," he said. "Won't you call on her help?"
"No," my mother insisted. "I know my limits, Julius. If I tried it again..." My heart skipped a beat. Iskandar's words came back to me. She saw things that made her seek advice from unconventional places. I recognized the look in my mother's eyes, and I knew. My mother had communed with Isis.
"Why didn't you tell me?" I wanted to scream.
My father summoned his staff and wand.
"Ruby, if we fail..."
"We can't fail," she insisted. "The world depends on it." They kissed one last time, as if they sensed they were saying goodbye. Then they raised their staffs and wands and began to chant. Cleopatra's Needle glowed with power. I yanked my hand away from the sarcophagus, my eyes stung with tears. "You knew my mother," I shouted at Isis. "You encouraged her to open that obelisk. You got her killed." I waited for her to answer. Instead, a ghostly image appeared in front of me, a projection of my father shimmering in the light of the golden coffin.
"Sadie,"
he smiled. His voice sounded tinny and hollow, the way it used to on the phone when he'd call me from far away, from Egypt or Australia or God knows where.
"Don't blame Isis for your mother's fate. None of us understood exactly what would happen. Even your mother could only see bits and pieces of the future. But when the time came, your mother accepted her role. It was her decision."
"To die?" I demanded. "Isis should have helped her. You should have helped her. I hate you!" As soon as I said it, something broke inside me. I started to cry. I realized I'd wanted to say that to my dad for years. I blamed him for Mum's death, blamed him for leaving me. But now that I'd said it, all the anger drained out me, leaving me nothing but guilt. "I'm sorry," I sputtered. I didn't...
"Don't apologize, my brave girl. You had every right to feel that way. You had to get it out. What you're about to do... You have to believe it's for the right reasons, not because you resent me."
"I don't know what you mean." He reached out to brush a tear from my cheek, but his hand was just a shimmer of light.
"Your mother was the first in many centuries to commune with Isis. It was dangerous, against the teachings of the house, but your mother was a diviner. She had a premonition that chaos was rising. The house was failing. We needed the gods. Isis could not cross the Duat. She could barely manage a whisper. But she told us what she could about their imprisonment. She counseled Ruby on what must be done. The gods could rise again, she said, but it would take many hard sacrifices. We thought the obelisk would release all the gods, but that was only the beginning.
Isis could have given Mum more power, or at least Bast offered...
No, Sadie. Your mother knew her limits. If she had tried to host a god, fully use divine power, she would have been consumed, or worse. She freed Bast and used her own power to seal the breach. With her life, she bought you some time.
Me? But...
You and your brother have the strongest blood of any Cain in 3,000 years. Your mother studied the lineage of the pharaohs. She knew this to be true. You have the best chance at relearning the old ways and healing the breach between magicians and gods. Your mother began the stirring. I unleashed the gods from the Rosetta Stone. But it will be your job to restore Maat.
You can help, I insisted, once we free you.
Sadie, he said forlornly, when you become a parent, you may understand this. One of my hardest jobs as a father, one of my greatest duties, was to realize that my own dreams, my own goals and wishes, are secondary to my children's. Your mother and I have set the stage, but it is your stage. This pyramid is designed to feed chaos. It consumes the power of other gods and makes Set stronger.
I know. If I break the throne, maybe open the coffin...
You might save me, Dad conceded. But the power of Osiris, the power inside me, would be consumed by the pyramid. It would only hasten the destruction and make Set stronger. The pyramid must be destroyed. All of it. And you know how that must be done.
I was about to protest that I didn't know, but the feather of truth kept me honest. The way was inside me. I'd seen it in Isis's thoughts. I'd known what was coming ever since Anubis asked me that impossible question. To save the world, would you sacrifice your father? I don't want to, I said. Please.
Osiris must take his throne. My father said, through death, life. It is the only way. May Maat guide you, Sadie. I love you.
And with that, his image dissipated. Someone was calling my name. I looked back and saw Zia trying to sit up, clutching weakly at her wand.
Sadie, what are you doing?
All around us, the room was shaking. Cracks split the walls as if a giant were using the pyramid as a punching bag. How long had I been in a trance? I wasn't sure, but I was out of time. I closed my eyes and concentrated. The voice of Isis spoke almost immediately. Do you see now? Do you understand why I could not say more? Anger built inside me, but I forced it down. We'll talk about that later. Right now, we have a god to defeat. I pictured myself stepping forward, merging with the soul of the goddess. I'd shared power with Isis before, but this was different. My resolve, my anger, even my grief gave me confidence. I looked Isis straight in the eye, spiritually speaking, and we understood one another. I saw her entire history, her early days grasping for power, using tricks and schemes to find the name of Ra. I saw her wedding with Osiris, her hopes and dreams for a new empire. Then I saw those dreams shattered by Set. I felt her anger and bitterness, her fierce pride and protectiveness for her young son, Horus. And I saw the pattern of her life repeating itself over and over again through the ages, through 1,000 different hosts. Gods have great power, Iskander had said, but only humans have creativity, the power to change history. I also felt my mother's thoughts, like an imprint on the goddess's memory, Ruby's final moments and the choice she'd made. She'd given her life to start a chain of events, and the next move was mine. Sadie, Zia called again, her voice weakening. I'm fine, I said. I'm going now. Zia studied my face and obviously didn't like what she saw. You're not fine. You've been badly shaken. Fighting Set in your condition would be suicide. Don't worry, I said. We have a plan. With that, I turned into a kite and flew up the air shaft towards the top of the pyramid. 40. I ruin a rather important spell. I found that things weren't going well upstairs. Carter was a crumpled heap of chicken warrior on the slope of the pyramid. Set had just placed the capstone and was shouting, 30 seconds to sunrise! In the cavern below, magicians from the House of Life waded through an army of demons, fighting a hopeless fight. The scene would have been frightening enough, but now I saw it as Isis did, like a crocodile with eyes at water level, seeing both below and above the surface. I saw the Duat entwined with the regular world. The demons had fiery souls in the Duat that made them look like an army of birthday candles. Where Carter stood in the mortal world, a falcon warrior stood in the Duat. Not an avatar, but the real thing, with feathered head, sharp blood-stained beak and gleaming black eyes. His sword rippled with golden light. As for Set, imagine a mountain of sand, doused with petrol, set on fire, spinning in the world's largest blender. That's what he looked like in the Duat. A column of destructive force so powerful that the stones at his feet bubbled and blistered. I'm not sure what I looked like, but I felt powerful. The force of Mutt coursed through me. The divine words were at my command. I was Sadie Kane, blood of the pharaohs, and I was Isis, goddess of magic, holder of the secret names. As Carter struggled his way up the pyramid, Set gloated, You can't stop me by yourself, Horus, especially not in the desert, the source of my strength. You're right, I called. Set turned, and the look on his face was priceless. I raised my staff and wand, gathering my magic. Except that Horus is not alone, I said, and we're not going to fight you in the desert. I slammed my staff against the stones and shouted, Washington, D.C.! The pyramid shook. For a moment, nothing else happened. Set seemed to realize what I was doing. He let out a nervous laugh.
Magic 101, Sadie Kane. You can't open a portal during the demon days.
A mortal can't, I agreed, but a goddess of magic can. Above us, the air crackled with lightning. The top of the cavern dissolved into a churning vortex of sand as large as the pyramid. Demons stopped fighting and looked up in horror. Magicians stammered mid-spell, their faces slack with awe. The vortex was so powerful that it ripped blocks off the pyramid and sucked them into the sand. And then, like a giant lid, the portal began to descend. "No!" Set roared. He blasted the portal with flames, then turned on me and hurled stones and lightning. But it was too late. The portal swallowed us all. The world seemed to flip upside down. For a heartbeat, I wondered if I'd made a terrible miscalculation, if Set's pyramid would explode in the portal and I'd spend eternity floating through the Duat as a billion little particles of Sadie sand. Then, with a sonic boom, we appeared in the cold morning air with a brilliant blue sky above us. Spread out below us were the snow-covered fields of the National Mall in Washington, D.C. The Red Pyramid was still intact, but cracks had appeared on its surface. The gold capstone glowed, trying to maintain its magic, but we weren't in Phoenix any more. The pyramid had been ripped from its source of power, the desert, and in front us loomed the default gateway for North America, the tall white obelisk that was the most powerful focal point of Mutt on the continent, the Washington Monument. Set screamed something at me in ancient Egyptian. I was fairly sure it wasn't a compliment.
"I will rend your limbs from their sockets," he shouted. "I will..."
"Die?" Carter suggested. He rose behind Set and swung his sword. The blade cut into Set's armor at the ribs, not a killing blow, but enough to knock the red god off balance and send him tumbling down the side of his pyramid. Carter bounded after him, and in the Duat I could see arcs of white energy pulsing from the Washington Monument to the Horus Avatar, charging it with new power. "The book, Sadie!" Carter shouted as he ran. "Do it now!" I must have been dazed from summoning the portal, because Set understood what Carter was saying a lot faster than I did.
"No!"
the red god shouted. He charged towards me, but Carter intercepted him halfway up the slope. He grappled with Set, holding him back. The stones of the pyramid cracked and crumbled under the weight of their godly forms. All around the base of the pyramid, demons and magicians who'd been pulled through the portal and knocked momentarily unconscious were starting to stir. "The book, Sadie." "Sometimes it's helpful to have someone other than yourself inside your head, because one can slap the other." "Duh! The book!" I held out my hand and summoned the little blue tome we'd stolen from Paris, the Book of Overcoming Set. I unfolded the papyrus. The hieroglyphs were as clear as a nursery school primer. I called for the Feather of Truth, and instantly it appeared, glowing above the pages. I began the spell, speaking the divine words, and my body rose into the air, hovering a few centimetres above the pyramid. I chanted the story of creation, the first mountain rising above the waters of chaos, the birth of the gods Ra, Geb, and Nut, the rise of Mut, and the first great empire of men, Egypt. The Washington Monument began to glow as hieroglyphs appeared along its sides. The capstone gleamed silver. Set tried to lash out at me, but Carter intercepted him, and the Red Pyramid began to break apart. I thought about Amos and Zia trapped inside under tons of stone, and I almost faltered, but my mother's voice spoke in my mind. "Stay focused, dearest. Watch for your enemy." "Yes," Isis said. "Destroy him." But somehow I knew that wasn't what my mother meant. She was telling me to watch. Something important was about to happen. Through the Duat, I saw magic forming around me, weaving a white sheen over the world, reinforcing Mart and expelling chaos. Carter and Set wrestled back and forth as huge chunks of the pyramid collapsed. The Feather of Truth glowed, shining like a spotlight on the red god. As I neared the end of the spell, my words began tearing Set's form to shreds.
In the Duat, his fiery whirlwind was being stripped away, revealing a black-skinned, slimy thing like an emaciated set animal, the evil essence of the god. But in the mortal world, occupying the same space, there stood a proud warrior in red armor, blazing with power and determined to fight to the death. "I name you Set," I chanted. "I name you Evil Day." With a thunderous roar, the pyramid imploded. Set fell crashing into the ruins. He tried to rise, but Carter swung his sword. Set barely had time to raise his staff. Their weapons crossed, and Horace slowly forced Set to one knee. "Now, Sadie," Carter yelled. "You have been my enemy," I chanted, "and a curse on the land." A line of white light shot down the length of the Washington Monument. It widened into a rift, a doorway between this world and the brilliant white abyss that would lock Set away, trapping his life force, maybe not forever, but for a long, long time. To complete the spell, I only had to speak one more line. "Deserving no mercy, an enemy of Mart, you are exiled beyond the earth." The line had to be spoken with absolute conviction. The feather of truth required it. And why shouldn't I believe it? It was the truth. Set deserved no mercy. He was an enemy of Mart. But I hesitated. "Watch for your enemy," my mother had said. I looked towards the top of the monument, and in the Duat I saw chunks of pyramid flying skyward and the souls of demons lifting off like fireworks. As Set's chaos magic dispersed, all the force that had been charging up ready to destroy a continent was being sucked into the clouds. And as I watched, the chaos tried to form a shape. It was like a red reflection of the Potomac. An enormous crimson river at least a mile long and 100 meters wide. It writhed in the air, trying to become solid, and I felt its rage and bitterness. This was not what it had wanted. There was not enough power or chaos for its purpose. To form properly, it needed the death of millions, the wasting of an entire continent. It was not a river. It was a snake. "Sadie!" Carter yelled. "What are you waiting for?" He couldn't see it, I realized. No one could but me. Set was on his knees, writhing and cursing as white energy encircled him, pulling him towards the rift.
"Lost your stomach, witch!" he bellowed.
Then he glared at Carter.
"You see, Horace, Isis was always a coward. She could never complete the deed."
Carter looked at me, and for a moment I saw the doubt on his face. Horace would be urging him towards bloody vengeance. I was hesitating. This is what had turned Isis and Horace against each other before. I couldn't let it happen now. But more than that, in Carter's wary expression, I saw the way he used to look at me on our visiting days, when we were practically strangers, forced to spend time together, pretending we were a happy family because Dad expected it of us. I didn't want to go back to that. I wasn't pretending any more. We were a family, and we had to work together. "Carter! Look!" I threw the feather of truth into the sky, breaking the spell. "No!" Carter screamed, but the feather exploded into silver dust that clung to the form of the serpent, forcing it to become visible just for an instant. Carter's mouth fell open as the serpent writhed in the air above Washington, slowly losing power. Next to me, a voice screamed, "Wretched gods!" I turned to see Set's minion, face of horror, with his fangs bared and his grotesque face only inches from mine, a jagged knife raised above my head. I only had time to think, "I'm dead," before a flash of metal registered in the corner of my eye. There was a sickening thud, and the demon froze. Carter had thrown his sword with deadly accuracy. The demon dropped his knife, fell to his knees, and stared down at the blade that was now sheathed in his side.
He crumpled to his back, exhaling with an angry hiss. His black eyes fixed on me, and he spoke in a completely different voice, a rasping, dry sound, like a reptile's belly scraping over sand.
"This is not over, godling. All this I have wrought with a wisp of my voice. The merest bit of my essence wriggling from my weakened cage. Imagine what I shall do when fully formed."
He gave me a ghastly smile, and then his face went slack. A tiny line of red mist curled from his mouth, like a worm or a fresh-hatched snake, and writhed upward into the sky to join its source. The demon's body disintegrated into sand. I looked up once more at the giant red serpent slowly dissolving in the sky. Then I summoned a good strong wind and dispersed it completely. The Washington Monument stopped glowing. The rift closed and the little spellbook disappeared from my hand. I moved towards Set, who was still ensnared in ropes of white energy. I'd spoken his true name. He wasn't going anywhere just yet.
"You both saw the serpent in the clouds," I said. "Apophis."
Carter nodded, stunned. "He was trying to break into the mortal world, using the Red Pyramid as a gateway. If its power had been unleashed..." He looked down in revulsion at the pile of sand that had once been a demon. "Set's lieutenant, face of horror. He was possessed by Apophis all along, using Set to get what he wanted."
"Ridiculous!"
Set glared at me and struggled against his bonds.
"The snake in the clouds was one of your tricks, Isis. An illusion!"
"You know it wasn't," I said. "I could have sent you into the abyss, Set, but you saw the real enemy. Apophis was trying to break out of his prison in the Duat. His voice possessed face of horror. He was using you."
"No one uses me!"
Carter let his warrior form disperse. He floated to the ground and summoned his sword back to his hand.
"Apophis wanted your explosion to feed his power, Set. As soon as he came through the Duat and found us dead, I'm betting you would have been his first meal. Chaos would have won."
"I am Chaos," Set insisted.
"Partially," I said, "but you're still one of the gods. True, you're evil, faithless, ruthless, vile."
"You make me blush, sister."
"But you're also the strongest god. In the ancient times, you were Ra's faithful lieutenant, defending his boat against Apophis. Ra couldn't have defeated the serpent without you."
"I am pretty great," Set admitted. "But Ra is gone forever, thanks to you."
"Maybe not forever," I said. "We'll have to find him. Apophis is rising, which means we'll need all the gods to battle him. Even you." Set tested his bonds of white energy. When he found he couldn't break them, he gave me a crooked smile.
"You suggest an alliance? You'd trust me?"
Carter laughed. "You've got to be kidding. But we've got your number now. Your secret name. Right, Sadie?" I closed my fingers, and the bonds tightened around Set. He cried out in pain. It took a great deal of energy, and I knew I couldn't hold him like this for long, but there was no point telling that to Set. "The House of Life tried banishing the gods," I said. "It didn't work. If we lock you away, we're no better than they are. It doesn't solve anything."
"I couldn't agree more," Set groaned. "So, if you'll just loosen these bonds..."
"You're still a villainous piece of scum," I said, "but you have a role to play, and you'll need controlling. I'll agree to release you, if you swear to behave, to return to the Duat and not cause trouble until we call you. And then you'll make trouble only for us, fighting against Apophis."
"Or I could chop off your head," Carter suggested. "That would probably exile you for a good long while."
Set glanced back and forth between us.
make trouble for you, eh? That is my speciality.
Swear by your own name and the throne of Ra, I said. You will leave now and not reappear until you are called.
Oh, I swear,
he said much too quickly,
by my name and Ra's throne and our mother's starry elbows.
If you betray us, I warned, I have your name. I won't show you mercy a second time.
You always were my favorite sister.
I gave him one last shock just to remind him of my power, and then let the bindings dissolve. Set stood up and flexed his arms. He appeared as a warrior with red armor and red skin, a black forked beard and twinkling cruel eyes. But in the Duat I saw his other side, a raging inferno just barely contained, waiting to be unleashed and burn everything in its path. He winked at Horus, then pretended to shoot me with a finger gun.
Oh, this will be good. We're going to have so much fun.
Be gone, evil day, I said. He turned into a pillar of salt and dissolved. The snow in the National Mall had melted in a perfect square, the exact size of Set's pyramid. Around the edges, a dozen magicians still lay passed out. The poor dears had started to stir when our portal closed, but the explosion of the pyramid had knocked them all out again. Other mortals in the area had also been affected. An early morning jogger was slumped on the sidewalk. On nearby streets, cars idled while the drivers took naps over the steering wheels. Not everyone was asleep, though. Police sirens wailed in the distance, and seeing as how we'd teleported practically into the president's backyard, I knew it wouldn't be long before we had a great deal of heavily armed company. Carter and I ran to the center of the melted square, where Amos and Zia lay crumpled on the grass. There was no sign of Set's throne or the golden coffin, but I tried to push those thoughts out of my mind. Amos groaned.
What?
His eyes clouded over with terror.
Set, he...
Rest. I put my hand on his forehead. He was burning with fever. The pain in his mind was so sharp it cut me like a razor. I remembered a spell Isis had taught me in New Mexico. Quiet, I whispered. Hairy. Faint hieroglyphs glowed over his face. Amos drifted back to sleep. But I knew it was only a temporary fix. Zia was even worse off. Carter cradled her head and spoke reassuringly about how she would be fine, but she looked bad. Her skin was a strange reddish color, dry and brittle, as if she'd suffered a horrible sunburn. In the grass around her, hieroglyphs were fading, the remains of a protective circle, and I thought I understood what had happened. She'd used her last bit of energy to shield herself and Amos when the pyramid imploded.
Set, she asked weakly, is he gone?
Yes. Carter glanced at me, and I knew we'd be keeping the details to ourselves. Everything's fine, thanks to you. The secret name worked. She nodded, satisfied, and her eyes began to close.
Hey, Carter's voice quavered. Stay awake. You're not going to leave me alone with Sadie, are you? She's bad company.
Zia tried to smile, but the effort made her wince.
I was never here, Carter. Just a message. A placeholder.
Come on. No, that's no way to talk.
Find her, will you?
Zia said. A tear traced its way down her nose.
She'd like that. A date at the mall.
Her eyes drifted away from him and stared blankly into the sky.
Zia! Carter clutched her hand. Stop that! You can't just...
I knelt next to him and touched Zia's face. It was cold as stone, and even though I understood what had happened, I couldn't think of anything to say or any way to console my brother. He shut his eyes tight and lowered his head. Then it happened. Along the path of Zia's tear, from the corner of her eye to the base of her nose, Zia's face cracked. Smaller fractures appeared, webbing her skin. Her flesh dried out, hardening, turning to clay. "Carter," I said. "What?" he said miserably. He looked up just as a small blue light drifted out of Zia's mouth and flew into the sky. Carter backed away in shock. "What? What did you do?" "Nothing," I said. "She's a Shapti. She said she wasn't really here. She was just a placeholder." Carter looked bewildered, but then a small light started to burn in his eyes, a tiny bit of hope. "Then the real Zia is alive. Iskander was protecting her," I said. "When the spirit of Nephthys joined with the real Zia in London, Iskander knew she was in danger. Iskander hid her away and replaced her with a Shapti. Remember what Toth said? Shapti make excellent stunt doubles? That's what she was. And Nephthys told me she was sheltered somewhere inside a sleeping host. But where, I don't know," I said. And in Carter's present state, I was too afraid to raise the real question. If Zia had been a Shapti all this time, had we ever known her at all? The real Zia had never gotten close to us. She'd never discovered what an incredibly amazing person I was. God forbid, she might not even like Carter. Carter touched her face, and it crumbled to dust. He picked up her wand, which remained solid ivory, but he held it gingerly, as if he were afraid it too would dissolve. "That blue light," he began to ramble. "I saw Zia release one in the first gnome, too, just like the Shapti in Memphis. They sent their thoughts back to Toth. So Zia must have been in contact with her Shapti. That's what the light was. They must have been, like, sharing memories, right? She must know what the Shapti's been through. If the real Zia is alive somewhere, she might be locked up or in some kind of magic sleep or... We have to find her!" I wasn't sure it would be so simple, but I didn't want to argue. I could see the desperation on his face. Then a familiar voice sent a cold shiver down my back. "What have you done?" Desjardins was literally fuming. His tattered robes still smoked from battle. Carter says I shouldn't mention that his pink boxer shorts were showing, but they were. His staff was aglow, and the whiskers in his beard smouldered. Behind him stood three equally battered magicians, who all looked as if they'd just regained consciousness. "Oh, good," I muttered. "You're alive."
"You bargained with Set?" Desjardins demanded. "You let him go?"
"We don't answer to you," Carter growled. He stepped forward, hand on his sword, but I put out my arm to hold him back. "Desjardins," I said as calmly as I could, "Apophis is rising in case you missed that part. We need the gods. The House of Life has to relearn the old ways."
"The old ways destroyed us," he yelled.
A week ago, the look in his eyes would have made me tremble. He fairly glowed with rage, and hieroglyphs blazed in the air around him. He was the chief lector, and I'd just undone everything the house had worked for since the fall of Egypt. Desjardins was a heartbeat away from turning me into an insect, and the thought should have terrified me. Instead, I looked him in the eye. Right now, I was more powerful than he was, much more powerful, and I let him know it. "Pride destroyed you," I said. "Greed and selfishness and all of that. It's hard to follow the path of the gods, but it is part of magic. You can't just shut it down."
"You are drunk with power," he snarled. "The gods have possessed you as they always do. Soon you will forget you are even human. We will fight you and destroy you."
Then he glared at Carter.
"And you. I know what Horus would demand.
You will never reclaim the throne. With my last breath,
save it, I said. Then I faced my brother. You know what we have to do. Understanding passed between us. I was surprised how easily I could read him. I thought it might be the influence of the gods, but then I realized it was because we were both Cains, brother and sister, and Carter, God help me, was also my friend.
Are you sure? He asked. We're leaving ourselves open.
He glared at Desjardins.
Just one more good smack with the sword?
I am sure, Carter. I closed my eyes and focused.
Consider carefully, Isis said. What we've done so far is only the beginning of the power we could wield together.
That's the problem, I said. I'm not ready for that. I've got to get there on my own. The hard way.
You are wise for a mortal, Isis said. Very well.
Imagine giving up a fortune in cash. Imagine throwing away the most beautiful diamond necklace in the world. Separating myself from Isis was harder than that. Much harder. But it wasn't impossible. I know my limits, my mother had said, and now I understood how wise she'd been. I felt the spirit of the goddess leave me. Part of her flowed into my necklace, but most of her streamed into the Washington Monument, back into the Duat, where Isis would go somewhere else. Another host? I wasn't sure. When I opened my eyes, Carter stood next to me, looking grief-stricken, holding his Eye of Horus amulet. Desjardins was so stunned he momentarily forgot how to speak English.
Ce n'est pas possible. On ne pourrait pas...
Yes, we could, I said. We've given up the gods of our own free will, and you've got a lot to learn about what's possible. Carter threw down his sword.
Desjardins, I'm not after the throne. Not unless I earn it by myself. And that's going to take time. We're going to learn the path of the gods. We're going to teach others. You can waste time trying to destroy us, or you can help.
The sirens were much closer now. I could see the lights of emergency vehicles coming from several directions, slowly cordoning off the National Mall. We had only minutes before we were surrounded. Desjardins looked at the magicians behind him, probably gauging how much support he could rally. His brethren looked in awe. One even started to bow to me, then caught himself. Alone, Desjardins might have been able to destroy us. We were just magicians now, very tired magicians with hardly any formal training. Desjardins' nostrils flared. Then he surprised me by lowering his staff.
There has been too much destruction today. But the path of the gods shall remain closed, if you cross the House of Life again.
He let the threat hang in the air. He slammed his staff down, and with a final burst of energy, the four magicians dissolved into wind and gusted away. Suddenly, I felt exhausted. The terror of what I'd been through began to sink in. We'd survived, but that was little consolation. I missed my parents. I missed them terribly. I wasn't a goddess anymore. I was just a regular girl, alone, with only my brother. Then Amos groaned and started sitting up. Police cars and sinister-looking black vans blocked the curbs all around us. Sirens blared. A helicopter sliced through the air over the Potomac, closing fast. God only knew what the mortals thought had happened at the Washington Monument, but I didn't want my face on the nightly news.
Carter, we have to get out of here, I said. Can you summon enough magic to change Amos into something small, a mouse, maybe? We can fly him out.
He nodded, still in a daze. But, Dad, we didn't... He looked around helplessly. I knew how he felt. The pyramid, the throne, the golden coffin... All of it was gone. We'd come so far to rescue our father, only to lose him. And Carter's first girlfriend lay at his feet in a pile of pottery shards. That probably didn't help either.
Carter protests that she wasn't really his girlfriend. Oh, please.
I couldn't dwell on it, though. I had to be strong for both of us so we'd end up in prison. First things first, I said. We have to get Amos to safety.
Where?
Carter asked. There was only one place I could think of.
41. We stop the recording, for now. I can't believe Sadie's going to let me have the last word. Our experience together must have really taught her something. Ow! She just hit me. Never mind. Anyway, I'm glad she told that last part. I think she understood it better than I did. And the whole thing about Zia not being Zia and Dad not getting rescued, that was pretty hard to deal with. If anybody felt worse than I did, it was Amos. I had just enough magic to turn myself into a falcon and him into a hamster. Hey, I was rushed. But a few miles from the National Mall, he started struggling to change back. Sadie and I were forced to land outside a train station, where Amos turned back into a human and curled into a shivering ball. We tried to talk to him, but he could barely complete a sentence. Finally, we got him into the station. We let him sleep on a bench while Sadie and I warmed up and watched the news. According to Channel 5, the whole city of Washington was under lockdown. There'd been reports of explosions and weird lights at the Washington Monument, but all the cameras could show us was a big square of melted snow on the mall, which kind of made for boring video. Experts came on and talked about terrorism, but eventually it became clear that there'd been no permanent damage, just a bunch of scary lights. After a while, the media started speculating about freak storm activity or a rare southern appearance of the northern lights. Within an hour, the authorities opened up the city. I wished we had Bost with us, because Amos was in no shape to be our chaperone. But we managed to buy tickets for our sick uncle and ourselves as far as New York. I slept on the way, the amulet of Horus clutched in my hand. We got back to Brooklyn at sunset. We found the mansion burned out, which we'd expected, but we had nowhere else to go. I knew we'd made the right choice when we guided Amos through the doorway and heard a familiar,
Hufu,
Sadie cried. The baboon tackled her in a hug and climbed onto her shoulders. He picked at her hair, seeing if she'd brought him any good bugs to eat. Then he jumped off and grabbed a half-melted basketball. He grunted at me insistently, pointing to a makeshift basket he'd made out of some burned beams and a laundry basket. It was a gesture of forgiveness, I realized. He had forgiven me for sucking at his favorite game, and he was offering lessons. Looking around, I realized that he'd tried to clean up in his own baboon way, too. He dusted off the one surviving sofa, stacked Cheerios boxes in the fireplace, and even put a dish of water and fresh food out for Muffin, who was curled up asleep on a little pillow. In the clearest part of the living room, under an intact section of roof, Hufu had made three separate mounds of pillows and sheets, sleeping places for us. I got a lump in my throat. Seeing the care that he'd taken getting ready for us, I couldn't imagine a better welcome home present. Hufu, I said, you are one freaking awesome baboon.
Ugh,
he said, pointing to the basketball. You want to school me? I said. Yeah, I deserve it. Just give us a second to... My smile melted when I saw Amos. He drifted over to the ruined statue of Toth. The god's cracked ibis head lay at his feet. His hands had broken off, and his tablet and stylus lay shattered on the ground. Amos stared at the headless god, the patron of magicians, and I could guess what he was thinking. A bad omen for a homecoming. It's okay, I told him. We're going to make it right. If Amos heard me, he gave no sign. He drifted over to the couch and plopped down, putting his head in his hands. Sadie glanced at me uneasily. Then she looked around at the blackened walls, the crumbling ceilings, the charred remains of the furniture.
Well, she said, trying to sound upbeat. How about I play basketball with Hufu, and you can clean the house?
Even with magic, it took us several weeks to put the house back in order. That was just to make it livable. It was hard without Isis and Horus helping, but we could still do magic. It just took a lot more concentration and a lot more time. Every day I went to sleep feeling as if I'd done 12 hours of hard labor. But eventually we got the walls and ceilings repaired and cleaned up the debris until the house no longer smelled of smoke. We even managed to fix the terrace and the pool. We brought Amos out to watch as we released the wax crocodile figurine into the water, and Philip of Macedonia sprang to life. Amos almost smiled when he saw that. Then he sank into a chair on the terrace and stared desolately at the Manhattan skyline. I began to wonder if he would ever be the same. He'd lost too much weight. His face looked haggard. Most days he wore his bathrobe and didn't even bother to comb his hair. He was taken over by Set, Sadie told me one morning when I mentioned how worried I was. Do you have any idea how violating that is? His will was broken. He doubts himself and, well, it may be a long time. We tried to lose ourselves in work. We repaired the statue of Toth and fixed the broken Shapti in the library. I was better at grunt work, moving blocks of stone or heaving ceiling beams into place. Sadie was better at fine details, like repairing the hieroglyphic seals on the doors. Once, she really impressed me by imagining her bedroom just as it had been and speaking the joining spell, Hainim. Pieces of furniture flew together out of the debris, and boom, instant repair job. Of course, Sadie passed out for 12 hours afterward. But still, pretty cool. Slowly but surely, the mansion began to feel like home. At night, I would sleep with my head on a charmed headrest, which mostly kept my ba from drifting off. But sometimes I still had strange visions. The Red Pyramid, the serpent in the sky, or the face of my father as he was trapped in Set's coffin. Once I thought I heard Zia's voice trying to tell me something from far away, but I couldn't make out the words. Sadie and I kept our amulets locked in a box in the library. Every morning I would sneak down to make sure they were still there. I would find them glowing, warm to the touch, and I would be tempted, very tempted, to put on the Eye of Horus. But I knew I couldn't. The power was too addictive, too dangerous. I'd achieved a balance with Horus once, under extreme circumstances, but I knew it would be too easy to get overwhelmed if I tried it again. I had to train first, become a more powerful magician before I would be ready to tap that much power. One night at dinner, we had a visitor. Amos had gone to bed early, as he usually did. Hufu was inside watching ESPN with Muffin on his lap. Sadie and I sat exhausted on the deck overlooking the river. Philip of Macedonia floated silently in his pool. Except for the hum of the city, the night was quiet. I'm not sure how it happened, but one minute we were alone, and the next there was a guy standing at the railing. He was lean and tall, with messed-up hair and pale skin, and his clothes were all black, as if he'd mugged a priest or something. He was probably around 16, and even though I'd never seen his face before, I had the weirdest feeling that I knew him. Sadie stood up so quickly, she knocked over her split pea soup, which is gross enough in the bowl, but running all over the table? Yuck!
Anubis! She blurted.
Anubis? I thought she was kidding, because this guy did not look anything like the slavering jackal-headed god I'd seen in the land of the dead. He stepped forward, and my hand crept for my wand.
Sadie? He said, Carter, would you come with me, please?
Sure,
Sadie said, her voice a little strangled. Hold on, I said, where are we going?
Anubis gestured behind him, and a door opened in the air, a pure black rectangle.
Someone wants to see you.
Sadie took his hand and stepped through into the darkness, which left me no choice but to follow.
The Hall of Judgment had gotten a makeover. The golden scales still dominated the room, but they had been fixed. The black pillars still marched off into the gloom on all four sides. But now I could see the overlay, the strange holographic image of the real world, and it was no longer a graveyard, as Sadie had described. It was a white living room with tall ceilings and huge picture windows. Double doors led to a terrace that looked out over the ocean. I was struck speechless.